Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Down at the 9-foot homemade oak bar, pour yourself a cold one. It's Bucks in the Basement. That's Craig. I'm Chris. Welcome down here. Another 30 minutes of Bucks baseball for you. The Pirates have some decisions to make before opening day, and they also made a move since last we talked. In fact, they made a couple of them since last you heard my voice, because I was a disaster last week, buddy. Thanks for taking over the ship for by yourself, by your lonesome. You did a pretty good job with Mike Pierzak.
Yeah, I mean, we got to hear myself just for one show, so if everybody likes my voice, I always say...
I'm out. Just throw me out.
It's a good show for you if you like my voice. If you don't, it's kind of maybe like nails on a chalkboard. I don't know.
You did a good job. I thought that was good. You guys did a really good job. If you missed the one from last week, make sure you go check it out. It's fun every once in a while when I'm not even involved and I get to listen to it. It kind of got me excited about this week's show. Let's talk about what happened since the last time that this show was on the air a week ago. Trevor Cahill gets brought in to be another pitcher on this Pirates staff, and he's brought in for depth. And the reaction is a little weird, isn't it? Like, aren't you like kind of surprised by how hyped people are about Trevor Cahill?
Yeah, I don't really get it. For me, it doesn't really move the needle too much. It's a guy who's a good veteran pitcher. We've talked about this before. They went out and got, you know, Anderson and brought him in from the Giants. Now, you know, Cahill from the Giants via like pretty much everybody known to man. I'm pretty sure the guy's played for, I don't know what it's been, like 9 teams in like the past 12 years or something. It's kind of an insane number.
You are close. 8 teams. 8 teams he's played for. The A's, the D-backs, the Cubs, that's got to be some sort of like Korean league there. I don't even recognize. No, it's Kansas City Royals. KCR, and I thought it was Korean baseball. That's pretty much the same thing these days. Okay, the San Francisco Giants, Atlanta, San Diego Padres, and the Angels. He's been on all those teams at some point, and now he adds the Pirates. That is his 9th team in his career.
When he's been successful, if you look at his stats over the past few years, a lot of his success has come from the bullpen. It's even his best year that I've seen recently when he was in Chicago. We wanted to bring him in. It was after the 2015 season and had offered him a starting gig. The Cubs said, no, we're going to keep you and put you in the bullpen. He signs with them and has like a pretty decent year. But every other year since then, most of his success, he's kind of started out as a starting pitcher and moved to the bullpen. And before the show, Chris, I mean, it wasn't saying that I wasn't thinking this was a great move or not, because last time when we signed Derek Holland to that minor league deal last year, I said this can either go really well or it can go how we think it's going to go, which he's going to pitch kind of okay at times. He's going to look like a disaster at times. You hope that, you know, one side rules out the other.
You're not being fair to poor Trevor Cahill comparing him to Derek Holland. I want to reiterate right now. I want to make sure everybody knows in case they don't want to go back and try to find the show when they got Derek Holland. I thought Derek Holland sucked, and I thought it was a terrible move. So don't lump me in with the he's the same as, because Cahill has some good qualities to him. Now, the problem is he has one good year and he has one bad year. So if you look back over the last couple of years, he has a good year in 2016. In 2017, he sucks. In 2018, he has a really good year. In 2019, he sucks. In 2020, good year again statistically. What does that mean for 2021? I feel like there's a pattern going on here. If he's good, he's trade bait. If he's bad, you don't get upset about it because he doesn't cost you a lot of money and you're in a rebuild. That's what Trevor Cahill is. Like, here's a guy that if he can get on a like kind of a heater. Like, you know, all of a sudden he becomes something good for a team. They'll sit there and say, oh yeah, I wouldn't mind a whip that's down in the 1 point teens. You know, that's great. But then he has years where his whip's almost a two, where he's putting on nearly two base runners per inning. Nobody wants him when he has those years. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of year he has for the Pirates. And by the way, if you were a pitcher and you had an opportunity to be on a World Series team, you'd take it. In 2016, he did win a World Series, even though he stayed in the bullpen for the Cubs.
I won't compare him directly to Derek Holland. I know you said that was a bad move, but to me, it's the same type of move because, except it's on a major league deal, just because if he pitches well, like you said, he's trade bait. If he pitches poorly, he's maybe DFA'd at some point during the season and you get nothing for him, or you just let him sit there in the bullpen or starting or whatever. Everybody's called him an innings eater. To me, an innings eater is a guy that you're handing the ball to every 5 days, and you know that they're going to be able to muscle through, you know, 5, 6, 7 innings, no matter how bad they're getting beat up. He's been pushed out of the starting rotation. Even, I think it was 2019, was that the Angels year?
Listen, here's the thing. You said innings eater, and I'm just trying to let you finish your thought. That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Whoever is calling Trevor Cahill an innings eater, take your right hand, extend it 3 feet in front of your face, or however far you can stretch, and then rear back and slap yourself as hard as you can. He had, an innings eater gets 200 innings. That's what an innings eater gets. He had three straight years of 196 innings, 207 innings, and 200 innings. You know when they were? 2010, 2011, and 2012. That's it. He hasn't been a guy who logs a bunch of innings ever since then. He's not an innings eater. Can he go a couple of innings in relief? Yeah, sure. Is he going to be a fifth starter that's going to come out there and just chew up innings for you? No, that isn't what he is. In fact, what he is, he's the kind of guy that if he pitches like a quality start, you're shocked, because that means he went six. And this guy isn't going six in most starts. He's not an innings eater. So that's a bad narrative. Whoever's saying that doesn't know their baseball.
Yeah, and I don't know what people think an innings eater means. If it's somebody who's depth to like pick up innings, because, you know, you need those guys to do that. Like you said, go like, you know, maybe stretch it to like a 2 or a 3 inning relief appearance, or when a starter gets in trouble early to do a little bit of long relief. Maybe that's the innings eater, but that's not an innings eater. That's like a mop up guy, or that's a guy that can basically, you know, get you out of a situation, but it doesn't really save you an arm at any point in time. It's just basically you have to use two arms to get through what normally you would get through with one pitcher. Like you're saying, that 6-inning quality start, you're throwing basically two guys together, almost like a piggyback, like they were doing before. To me, like, and that's where, like, I don't understand where this move makes a whole lot of sense. Like, he fills a place that people that he is stepping in for, like a Carson Fulmer. To me, I would rather have Carson Fulmer.
I would have rather had Carson Fulmer than Trevor Cahill. I'm with you on that 100%. I don't understand why the Pirates keep playing with poor Carson Fulmer. Like, if you don't want him, why do you pick him up like 3 times in the last year and then release him? The guy was a former first-round draft pick. If you think that he's valuable, then keep him and let him pitch. I'd rather you give the innings to him in a rebuild year than the Trevor Cahill. That's what doesn't make any sense to me. Unless the idea is we need a few pieces we can flip later, and maybe that's what they're thinking. We need pieces we can flip later. If he's good, we're able to flip him. But on the other hand, like, I don't know. I just don't think that he's not a sure enough thing to be good that I would take away innings from a guy that might turn into something. Unless really Carson Fulmer turned out to be like a jerk. I don't know him personally. Maybe Carson Fulmer got in there and they're like, we want you to do this. And he's like, nope. And like, all right, we're releasing you. Like, maybe that's how that went. But it's weird. It's weird that you had a guy that you brought in several times over the last couple of years, over the last year, you brought in a guy, and it's weird that you don't like him enough to keep him the moment a guy like Trevor Cahill comes along. You know, it's strange to me.
Yeah, and I mean, that wasn't like the direct move. The direct move was, you know, Underwood Jr.
That's true.
Came in and they let Carson Fulmer go, and then they bring Cahill in because Cederlund's, you know, going on the 60-day IL and everything. But to me, that's who he's replacing. Like him and Underwood are replacing Carson Fulmer And to me, I would have, that still is still gets to me. I still would have stuck with Fulmer, man.
I would have stuck with Fulmer. I think Fulmer at worst is a really nice bullpen piece. The kid can pitch. His biggest problem was not, you know, his first inning he was out there. His biggest problem was when he got through the lineup a second time. That was an arm that you could have used. I was surprised that they let him go. Anyway, overall, I think we agree. The Cahill thing should not move the needle to make you super excited. He's not an innings eater. But he's a shot in the dark as a possibility that if he gets off to a hot start and he continues that until you're able to deal him to a team that's too stupid to realize that he's good for a little while and then he falls off, then maybe you get something out of him. And that's really all Trevor Cahill is. And talking more about him would be ridiculous at this point, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you, man.
So we wasted way too much time on him. Hey, gang. Ever wonder what it's like to be a small business owner? It's confusing. Weird expenses coming out of nowhere. And when you throw in health insurance, forget it. Nobody understands how that works. If you own a business, big or small, it's one of the biggest expenses you have all year long. And yet, we all wait until open enrollment at the end of the year, and then we think to ourselves, next year I'll get a jump on it. And then it's another year of paying way too much. If you're a business owner, big or small, HR representative that wants to impress the boss, give Butch Zimar of Elite Benefits of America a call. Save yourself or your boss thousands or even tens of thousands of dollars a year. Reach out to Butch right now, 708-535-3006, or shoot him an email, butch@elitebenefits.net. And be sure to check out the Zimar podcast. Don't wait till the last minute. Put Butch Zimar to work for you now. There's an article out right now on the Pirates website, and I think everybody had to do this. Like, MLB.com employs beat writers for all of the teams. So every team has their own Jake Krause. We have Jake Krause, and what he does is he breaks down the Pirates, and he's covering the team for MLB.com. He doesn't work for the Pirates, works for MLB.com. So he's watching the team, and I always find that these guys that are working for MLB.com know a lot of the inside stuff. They sometimes will tell you a name that's making a team and you're like, really? But they know because they probably get more access than most people. Sometimes I think they get more access than the regular beat writers for, let's say, the Post-Gazette or something like that. Like they're right there in the room. They're part of the organization of Major League Baseball in some way. And they may be getting a little bit more in terms of, like, you know, on the side, like, by the way, this is what's probably going on. So when he gives who he thinks is breaking camp, the 26 guys that are breaking camp, I want to pay attention to it and I want to talk about it because it might give you some insight into who at least has the inside track. So at catcher, supposedly they're breaking with two. This is as of the 14th of March, so this is very recent. His most updated list has Stallings and Tony Walters breaking. Does that surprise you in any way?
No, it really doesn't. Once Walters was signed, because they had taken Perez right as the season ended, he got put on waivers. I could see Walters has like the same makeup, but is a little bit more of a veteran. Plus, Perez has the options. You hold him on the 40 man. Once, you know, everything's designated, you could put him down to AAA. It gives you depth, so I can't disagree with that one whatsoever.
At first base, Colin Moran, that's his first baseman, and that's pretty much something we have been talking about last year. We were talking about it in the middle of the season last year. Like, if this thing with Moran, what he's doing in 2020 is real, then you could move on from Bell and get something for him. You could actually make a decision to just keep one of them because Cabrian Hayes is your third baseman. So, of course, Moran is the first baseman, and it makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah, and he actually, he's a very bad third baseman, which when you move him across, it makes, you know,
you're an average first baseman. You may be above average, because if you ever stood at third at the hot corner, you can at least react fairly well to a ball hit down the line coming at you down the first baseline. So he should be a pretty good first baseman if he played third base. Second base, he's got Adam Frazier as your starting second baseman. Does that surprise you?
Frazier is the type of person that that Charrington has to have his finger on the pulse of when he's going to be hot and when he could get cold. And if you're going to move him this year, you're going to have to move him in the middle of his hot streak, because we know that Frazier goes up and down. But Frazier, I like Frazier. He's a solid ball player. Going to hit 270 something. Going to give you 10 home runs. He's going to play good defense.
You know what Adam Frazier is? Adam Frazier is a really good guy to have on your bench if you're going for a championship.
Oh, absolutely.
If he's starting on your team, that says a lot about your team. And so what they need him to have is have a season that he's accustomed to having, so that a team that's making a run and needs depth late will go and acquire him. And you will find teams that need depth. I mean, there are teams everywhere, but the first one that jumps out, because they just wrote a story about the American League Central I was reading the other day, and the one Achilles heel they said for the White Sox was lack of depth. And there's a team that late in the season with Nick Madrigal, who's already injured himself once, and he's a rookie second baseman, if all of a sudden they see an injury to their infield, they could be knocking on the door saying, let's bring in Adam Frazier until that guy gets better. And then Frazier sits on the bench and he's coming off the bench with his bat or filling in someplace in the postseason, because that's a team with postseason aspirations. That's the kind of team that an Adam Frazier goes to in the middle of the year if he's playing really well.
And I'd like to see that for him. I mean, he's just a good ball player.
Eric Gonzalez and Kevin Newman are in at short. Guess who's not there? Your boy, Cole Tucker.
Yeah.
Which doesn't surprise me, because he's not good enough to be on the major league roster.
I will say the one thing that I noticed with Cole Tucker, he has made a change to his batting stance, and it seems to be generating a little bit more power. I don't know if it's going to be enough to hit at the major league level. I'm not going to, you know, turn full just because, you know, Vanessa Hudgens was like on my screen for a couple minutes while he was playing in a spring training game. But I will say that the Cole Tucker, the couple times he's been at bat, he's been injured. He had like a thumb contusion or something, that he has looked a little bit better at the plate. He looks more comfortable. And if he could just generate just even a little bit of power, I still think he starts in AAA this year, but I'm not as down on him as I have been in previous years.
Are you platooning Gonzalez and Newman, or is there a guy that you would prefer to see in there more than the other?
It's tough, man, because...
It's tough because of Newman's year that he had in 2019. I mean, he had a crappy 2020, but he had an OPS over 800 in 130 games in 2019. And that's why you sit there and you go, man, you almost want to give him a chance again in a full season in 2021 to get regular playing time.
That's where we go back to the time when they had... I guess they didn't even tender Gonzalez. They signed him to a contract to avoid having to go to arbitration with him, even any part of the process, that we were kind of not maybe like confused. It's like, okay, so where does he fit in this? Newman's glove, in my mind, does not play at shortstop, and it just doesn't. He was a great player in 2019 in spite of his defensive faults. And it's because of, like you talked about with the hitting. If the hitting's there, he plays himself into that position with the bat. He doesn't do it with the glove, whereas Gonzalez is a much better fielder at shortstop, but the bat can be streaky, but you see it comes back down to earth and it ends up where it normally ends up at, which is about a 240-something average and I don't even know what it was, like a 60-some WRC plus or something. It's just like a terrible... So, Chris, with that one, I don't know why there's that many guys. I think that they weren't sure what he's going to be, and Gonzalez was kind of just like the safe bet. You know what you're getting with him.
Gonzalez is a safe bet, but I don't know if he's got a higher ceiling. If Newman can figure out how to play defense better, then he's got a much higher ceiling. And there are guys who start off at the shortstop position, and the glove doesn't play very well, and they get better, and they improve at it defensively. If he can hit... I'd rather see him more often, but maybe I'm the crazy person. Because Brian Hayes is likely going to be breaking camp with the team. We had that doomsday scenario we talked about recently. Like, what if they start messing with his time? But I think he's going to end up breaking. So does this article here. And I don't think there's very much to talk about except that he's awesome. And hopefully he continues to be awesome, because really you're hanging your entire future on the idea that his awesomeness will only get more awesome.
The way I've seen him hit, Chris, is not like anything I ever saw in the minors. He hits it to all fields now. He just hits for power. He barrels up balls every single time. And he's like, there's times where there could be a space open there on like the right-hand side and he could put it right through there. It's insane, like the leaps and bounds he's made in the past 2 years with his bat. We always knew the glove was going to play. If the bat even remains an inkling or just a smidge of what it is right now, man, he's like your perennial all-star from your team. He really is.
Well, he's the only reason to watch an at bat. Like, if you get into the stadium this year and you watch the game, you don't go and get yourself a hot dog or hit the bathroom when he's coming up, because he's the only appointment viewing on this club until somebody proves otherwise. Like, I would have thought Brian Reynolds until of last year. He's got to come back and prove that to me, you know? But I think that's your really only appointment viewing in the lineup that you definitely want to make sure that you watch. Reynolds, Alford, and Polanco considered to be the three outfielders in this projected opening day roster. And there's a lot of potential in this one. I think Polanco actually might have a pretty good year, and the Pirates are hoping so that they can move him if they can. Alford's the guy that you're thinking, like, that's who the experiment's going to be with. And Brian Reynolds, you're looking for the rebound. Those were the only two guys that I'm going to throw in here, the two utility guys, before we finish out. The only two other players supposedly making this team in this projected 2021 opening day roster article on MLB.com, Todd Frazier and Dustin Fowler. Fowler would be the backup outfielder. Frazier would be the backup infielder. So when you hear all the names that I've given you so far for position players, anybody not on this list that you're like, what the heck?
Well, I think that people would probably be saying, you know, what the heck to like a Phillip Evans. That's somebody that would pop into my mind. But when they brought in Todd Frazier, who can play third base and first base, I mean, Phillip Evans can play, you know, third base, first base, a little bit of outfield, but that kind of makes him expendable. The one, it's kind of surprising, when they brought in Brian Goodwin, I thought he was going to definitely make the team as possibly the starting center fielder just because of the experience. As long as Alford is okay from getting hit in the elbow during the game this weekend, I think he's shown that he can flash the leather, he can hit, and they might just go young with him and Fowler. I'd like to see Goodwin still there, and technically he was signed to a minor league contract, so he could go to AAA.
That's the thing. You retain Goodwin, you can't retain Fowler if he doesn't make the team. You can retain Phillip Evans, you can't retain Todd Frazier, correct? It's the same thing. Like, so isn't that the reasoning probably behind the whole thing? Is that like, hey, if Frazier and Fowler are playing well, we can always stash these other guys in the minors until they're needed.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be, I know that there's those little quirks in there, Chris, of whether or not a guy can accept that, you know, designation. I think that Goodwin, there's usually when they sign those minor league contracts with the deals, they have that little opt out. But if they feel like there's a chance for them to make the team at some point in time and be called up, they may stick around for that minor league deal, or they may declare themselves free agents, or there's like those little things that I don't completely get every single time, because Jason Martin got to declare himself a free agent, and I was kind of confused by that one. But I think that's the reason. I think that it's going to be a lot of the options game.
So Jay Krause writes this article, just came out over the last couple of days, predicting the 2021 opening day roster for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and it's on the Pirates website. He writes for MLB.com, and we're up against it, so I kind of want to make sure that we get through all the pitching. So let's look at what he says for the rotation. He has six guys that he considers to be starters, but one of these guys is clearly a swing man. Brault, Keller, Anderson, Cool, Brubaker, and now Trevor Cahill that we just talked about. And yeah, you could talk about six-man rotations, but I don't think that they're going to do that. I think the idea is you have a swing man because somebody gets sick from COVID or has a positive test, somebody needs a break. You have to remember, even the pitchers that go deep and do like 200, 220 innings, they got like 60 to 70 innings last year because of the shortened season. So imagine every pitcher in Major League Baseball is now coming off of an injury-shortened season where they only had 60 innings and you can't expect them to go 200. So you might start as a long reliever and then eventually become a starter and then go back into being in long relief. So six starters makes sense, because otherwise you're going to hurt somebody. So six will be there, but only five will be starters, correct?
Yeah, and that's what Shelton and Charrington have been talking about is they want six guys who are able to be starters. They didn't say like that we need. They said we need six starters. So people's minds constantly go to that full six-man rotation.
Right.
To me, it's just guys that, like you said, that can jump in, that can go back and forth. I mean, they have a bunch of guys that could go down to AAA, like a Will Crow, who's technically a starter. They put Chase DeYoung in to start one of the games here just to see how he would be out of the gate. So for me, I feel like that there's going to be maybe some guys like, you know, that are strictly the bullpen and that's all they're going to be. But you're going to have your five main rotation guys and you're probably going to have like three, four, five guys that are could float in between AAA major league level that are going to be making up that sixth man. So it might not even be like, hey, it's going to be Cahill every single time or something. It could be, hey, we got to call up, you know, Will Crow because we got to add a man for a doubleheader or something. So it's going to be Will Crow this time. Just like they did with Cody Ponce last year. They technically had 6 to 7 starters last year that they were pulling guys in when, you know, things were getting a little bit thin. So I feel like it's going to be like the same type of thing. So I play into that a little bit that, you know, guys are going to need, you know, innings taken away from him, like because of, you know, not being ramped up as much as they were last year. But it's a five-man rotation with a couple floaters in and out. That's the way I look at it.
Now we get to the most complicated thing, so I'm going to try to break this down easy for you so that you can kind of focus on the important things here. The bullpen. He's got 8 guys making it into the bullpen, and Richard Rodriguez, of course, is in. Kyle Crick, of course, is in. Chris Stratton, of course, is in. Michael Felice, of course, is in. None of those guys surprise me. The only surprise is the fact that he says that Shelton does not like Rodriguez as a closer and likes him as a setup guy, so you could actually see Crick as the closer. Ugh. Like, I just think back to, like, all the times that would have backfired on you in previous years. And, like, Rodriguez is the better pitcher, in my opinion, but it doesn't sound like the coach is into him as the closer. You could touch on that in a second. Luis Oviedo was a Rule 5 pickup. It makes perfect sense for this team, no matter how he's pitching, to have him start the team in the bullpen because you don't want to have to give him back and you're not really playing for a championship this year. So in reality, there's 3 other spots. They go to Underwood Jr., Hartlieb, and Shreve, according to this article. Will Crow is one of the guys on the outside looking in. Anything surprise you there?
I think once again, Chris, this is like it's almost like the options game. Once again, it's like the guys that are going to have options because we've seen the guy who came over in the Joe Musgrove trade who we talked about him. Me and Mike Piersak talked about him last week. A lot of articles have been written on him. You know, David Bednar, he is a local boy, and every single time that he takes the mound, they're going to talk about how he's from Mars, PA. They're going to show the picture of him in the little, you know, uniform where he had his Pirates uniform on and everything. The guy has pitched lights out. The guy has pitched like he could be a closer. The guy has pitched like he should be in the bullpen. But they're not going to use him because he has options.
And he has a long-term impact for this team. Make no mistake about it. You don't trade Joe Musgrove to get a guy that you're going to use up before you can actually start winning. And they don't want to do that with this guy. Look, relief pitchers normally have a very short shelf life. Don't start this guy now. Wait until batters aren't used to him at the majors when you need him. Because you don't know if you're going to get only a couple of years out of him before, you know, teams start to figure out what he does coming out of the pen. I'm with you on that one. I think that's the kind of guy that stays down there. It's weird. It's really strange to break down a roster when you know that you're not breaking it down for who are the best 26 guys. And that's the thing that I think Pirates fans have to kind of wrap their heads around this year, as much as it drives you nuts. Because if you were taking the best 26, it wouldn't be these 26. I think that's fair, right? That's fair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's completely fair.
Right. I mean, if you were taking the best 26, it wouldn't be these 26. Like, some of these guys will be puffing their chest out saying, I'm a major leaguer. You're a major leaguer because it's a rebuild. If it was really an even competition where this team was competing for something, you wouldn't be on the team. Now, that also gives you the opportunity to prove that I'm wrong when you go and take the mound in the majors. And that's kind of where we're at this point. Some of these guys are going to have to prove that people like you and I are wrong about whether or not they're the right guy to be out on the mound, or whether or not they're the right guy to be out on this team playing the field or taking at bats or anything else like that. But make no mistake about it, the 2022 and 2023 and 2024 Pirates, there are guys that are down in the minor leagues that will be taking these jobs at some point. These guys get first crack at trying to keep those jobs. Or in the case of a guy like Todd Frazier, he gets one more season in the sun at 35 years old, I think. And he's been impressing in spring training, so what the heck? Let him go out there and hit. Who knows? I think the Pirates could jump out really early in this thing in a division that I don't think is very strong and look really good. Like early on, we might be trying to temper expectations with people saying they're not rebuilding, they're winning it all.
And you're going to be like, no, man, they're not.
Fly
it's not
the
even
Jolly
close.
Roger.
No, man, it's the thing. The thing for me right now is you're lining guys up almost to either see if they can be traded or almost lining them up to slaughter. That's like where it is. It's like you have to prove yourself if you're going to be on this team past, you know, July.
All right. So as we end, give me the one guy that's not Cabrian Hayes or, you know, Brian Reynolds, who's trying to rebound. Give me the one guy. It might be a relief pitcher that you're like, I'm rooting for this kid because I think he might be good enough to be something for my future, not for your now. But for your future, who is that guy?
I can't mention the same guy again. I've been talking about Shea Spitzbarth like it's been going out of style.
If you love him, you love him. But he's not making the team.
He's not making the team.
Is there anybody that's going to make this team out of spring training that you're excited about?
No.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.